This is Sphinx Radio, exploring the enigmas of the ages and the puzzles of the present, with your host, William H. Kennedy.
Stephen Myers, welcome to Sphinx Radio.
Thank you for having me on the program. I appreciate this opportunity.
Now, you are the author of a book, Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid, and you have a fascinating organization called The Pump .org, www.thepump.org, which deals primarily with Egyptology. Now, could you tell us what your organization actually does, what its aims and goals are? It's called the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation.
Certainly. The Pharaoh's Pump Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit foundation located out here in Oregon. And we are a group of people who formalized our interest, our common interest, in understanding how the Great Pyramid was built and why it was built. And we're conducting research, experimentation here at our facility. And we ultimately compiled much of our research in the book that just came out that I wrote called Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid.
Really great, great stuff. Now, you have some other fascinating members of the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation. Many of them have actually been on Sphinx Radio, which I guess from the title of the show is appropriate. And I see that you have Robert Schock, Professor Robert Schock of Boston University. Who are some of the other Egyptologists involved in the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation?
Well, we don't have any Egyptologists. Robert Schock is not an Egyptologist.
He's a geologist. A geophysicist, technically.
Yeah,
that's
a
right.
Geophysicist. To be honest with you, is not associated with our foundation. Him and I met in Egypt a number of years ago when our foundation sent a research team to do on-site research at the Great Pyramid. But there's a number of people, not really Egyptologists, that type of thing, but there's people that have an interest in understanding how the Great Pyramid was built and why. We want to understand how many thousands of very heavy payloads were moved from point A to point B, and we want to, we're researching these ancient lost technologies, many of which we feel have an application for our modern but troubled world.
Now, that's quite fascinating because you hear a lot of different theories about how the Great Pyramids came to be built and how old the Sphinx is. And, you know, you hear everything from UFOs using laser beams. And what is your take on the extraterrestrial element? Do you believe any of that is valid?
Well, it's certainly a hypothesis that people have put forth that extraterrestrials were needed with high technology to build the Great Pyramid. Much of the Great Pyramid speaks, in fact, of extra high technology, the extreme precision of the stones being cut, as well as moving these massive stones with great precision. But I don't think that the aliens were involved. I think that who was involved was probably human beings who were geniuses. Mm. And those geniuses came up with a way to move these heavy stones, and it's interesting to note that Egyptologists, who are considered experts in the field, cannot demonstrate virtually any of the aspects of building this ancient structure.
Now, that's really interesting because Colin Wilson's a friend of mine, and I remember him saying once, the Japanese tried to build a pyramid similar to the one in Egypt and as kind of a tourist attraction, and they were unable to. Do you know of anybody who's been able to recreate the technology they used to any impressionable extent?
No, I do not. Hmm. I do know that the idea of a big ramp and all of that, none of that has been demonstrated. That's one of the things that I found out in researching for the book. Egyptologists, in fact, are just telling a story. They've never moved a heavy payload around the corner of a spiral ramp. They've never made one casing stone, those highly precise stones that used to be on the outside of the Great Pyramid. It's never been done. They say it was done using hand tools, but they can't demonstrate it, which led us to look into an alternative idea, and that idea was put forward originally by an independent researcher called Edward Kunkel, and he wrote a book called Pharaoh's Pump, which we had tried to honor him by naming our foundation after his book. And he felt that it was the buoyancy of water with the stones on barges that allowed the Great Pyramid to be built.
Now, I understand that there are traces of what seemed to be water that were around the pyramid at one time. Have you looked into that at all?
Oh, certainly. There's a number of researchers that interpret different pieces of evidence such that there was water on the Giza Plateau. Certainly Herodotus, the 5th century BC historian, said or wrote that the pyramids appeared to be like islands surrounded with water. There used to be a wall around the Great Pyramid, and we felt that impounded a pond that the Great Pyramid sat in. And inside the Great Pyramid, there was what Petrie discovered was what he called Nile earth, which is interpreted to be dried sediment. So this and just a whole host of other evidences indicate that certainly there was water on the Great Pyramid, or on the Giza Plateau.
Wonderful. Now, even around the Sphinx, there's some water wear marks, from what I understand. So,
yes. According to Schock, Robert Schock, who probably, if I can say this, alternative researchers, he's the most credentialed, if you will. I just listened to your interview with him a while back. And tremendous guy. I met him and everything, and he felt that there was a lot of water erosion on the Sphinx, certainly.
Now, it's quite interesting because I have a lot of people from the Skeptic Society on the show, and like Michael Shermer and James Randi, and they'll just write all this off and say, oh, it's ultimately just stacking up a pile of rocks. They could have figured it out somehow, and it's not that really all that amazing. Yet, no major scientist, as you said earlier, has recreated how they did this in any way. And does the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation plan on someday somehow trying to recreate how the pyramid was built?
Certainly, we're doing a lot of research and fundraising to create some interesting recreations. We do, though, have some funding for people to recreate the casing stones. Just for an example, we have $50,000 for a scholarship, and all people have to do is make 5 casing stones the same size as the originals and move them about 100 yards, and then move them on and off a barge, because Egyptians did that, and then ultimately they get $50,000. Now, Egyptologists say the stones were moved one every 2 minutes, so that would be 10 minutes work, according to Egyptologists.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah, if you know any skeptics out there that need a little bit of money, send them our way.
Well, they just tend to write it off. They never take up these interesting offers, you know. They just flick it off with a pen.
The skeptics don't engage in experimentation. They don't increase the body of knowledge or anything. They're just people that say no.
Naysayers, so to speak.
Just something else that interferes with progress is all. That's my experience.
Now, could I ask you, Stephen, what is your take on the actual age of the Giza Plateau, because you hear some really far out numbers, even from some friends of mine. Some say 10,000 years, some say 15,000 years. Mm-hmm. What's your take on it?
Well, the focus of our research is how the Great Pyramid was assembled, just as a construction project, and how it was used by the original builders. But it's interesting to note that Egyptologists know a lot about ancient Egypt. That includes the culture, the technology, you know, all of that. Yet, that culture and that technology seemingly cannot create even the components in the Great Pyramid. So most people say, most alternative researchers say that the Great Pyramid was built earlier, and it possibly before the last catastrophe. I would say that would be, if you're a Bible person, pre-flood, or you know, they say 2012 is going to be like a restart of the civilization, our world, or whatever. So possibly before that last catastrophe, which might have had technology, or probably had very high technology, much different than what we have. And so that's probably when the Great Pyramid was built.
Wow, quite amazing stuff. And it, and even the mainstream Egyptologists, and I know a few of them, they're even starting to push the dates back now, which is really, really amazing. They're making some concessions, not a lot, but they're at least considering that certainly these things might be older than the layout they have. Now,
yeah, they have to do that because people are demanding to understand how the Great Pyramid was built, just as a technological focus. The Great Pyramid is a 45-story tall skyscraper, and it took some pretty high technology to build it.
Quite amazing stuff, really.
Mm-hmm. The Age of the Sphinx is by Robert Schock's research is. Most researchers, it takes a generation, really, for people to change their minds, if you will. But they think that there's a lot of people that think that the Sphinx is much older than traditional Egyptologists feel. And at one time, people felt, because all of this is under great controversy, that the Sphinx and the pyramids were built in within a few generations. So that would put the Great Pyramid's construction much earlier than what is traditionally thought. But what's real interesting to me is how the Great Pyramid was built.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it. It all ties in together. Now, one thing I understand, I was talking to Noor Yalman, who was the head of the Middle East Studies Department at Harvard, and one thing he pointed out to me is it's really tough to tell a lot about dating and names, because a lot of times one pharaoh would obliterate the name and dates and things that another pharaoh had on a lot of these monuments and things in Egypt. So within even Egyptology, there's a lot to unravel.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's a lot. It's very hard to figure out who was where when, because you know Egypt number four might not have liked. Pharaoh number four may not have liked Pharaoh number two and carved out his name anywhere. It happened to like a Amenhotep would, I guess, be the great example of this. So I guess the point I'm making, even within the discipline of Egyptology, which I guess you would be on the fringe of, or maybe even part of to some extent, there's a lot of great debate. Now, what's your take? And you can give me any answer you like. You hear a lot of things about pyramid power, you know, how like razor blades won't rust under pyramids. And I'm working on a book on Jackie Gleason right now, and he actually slept in a pyramid-shaped bed.
Oh, I did not know that.
Few people realize that. He was a big esoteric studies person in his private time. He even funded like Ryan at Duke University on ESP and went on Long John Neville. But what is your take? Have you done anything in that area, or do you think it's baloney? What do you think of those sort of pyramid power kind of beliefs, which are very much out there? I get a lot of emails about it.
There's a lot of people that adhere to those ideas. And in the 70s, I'm old enough where I can remember the 70s, but the book Pyramid Power came out, and there's a lot of research in that area. There's actually some demonstrations, that type of thing. Certainly, it's something that needs to be researched more. And I think that the ancients, who were geniuses who built the pyramids, specifically the Great Pyramid, knew a lot about physics and about the world around them, things that even us in the 21st century need to catch up to. That's for sure.
Very interesting. Now, I've had Robert Bavall on this show before, and he has some provocative ideas about how the pyramids tied into astrology or ancient astronomy. As far as how these were constructed, do you see any astrology involved with the shapes of the pyramids and where they point to and things of that nature?
There's a lot of research about that, and a lot of authors have written books about how the vents in the king's and queen's chambers point to stars and that type of thing. I don't know. There's certainly scholarly debate about that, because no matter what, if something points up to the sky,
it's going to point to something, yeah.
Yeah, did you know that the Statue of Liberty has a crown with points? It has 7 points, and all of those point to stars.
Oh, I know. I mean, there are even people who tie that in because it's a Freemasonic structure that was delivered to. So you always get the conspiratorial like you say, if I go outside and point up right now, I'll be pointing at something out there.
Right.
So you gotta think of it from that perspective as well.
Right.
That's a point well taken.
Yeah. Well, there's a correlation, certainly, between the vents and the stars, but is there a causation? And there's a lot of controversy about that. Some researchers say, well, the Book of the Dead talks about these stars and that type of thing, but the Book of the Dead really wasn't in the Great Pyramid as such. But then they'll say, well, it's symbolic. You know, there's symbolic, you know, correlations and all of that. So there's a lot of debate about that, but there's no debate about how the stones were moved from point A to B, because that's something that's right down to something that needs to be demonstrated in the real world. And if they can be demonstrated that these big heavy stones were drug up a ramp and set in place, then you don't need any alternative ideas. But in the real world, it literally can't be done. So that's what necessitates all of these other alternative ideas to make up for the shortcomings of the stories of Egyptologists.
Now, what's your take on, like, PBS did a special where they had a mini pyramid that they kind of built, but it wasn't to any of the dimensions of the real pyramid, and they said that's prove it. What do you think of that?
Well, that's nice. The stones were about 1.5 tons.
Right. Well, their alleged reconstruction was to have stones that were like 1/4 of that size and weight, maybe even a little bit less, which, you know, they threw together with some, you know, moved them with some wood.
It was a farcical comic opera.
Oh, you did see that then?
Oh, yeah. It was ridiculous.
it really was. I mean,
That's like me saying, I can pick up a car because I can pick up a bicycle.
Or a matchbox.
Yes. it's just a hokum. You know, it's ridiculous. They never made one surface of one of the stones the same precision as a casing stone. You know, they used diminutive stones, small, to say how big stones were moved. I mean, it's just not scientific. It's horrible.
Now, that was presented right on, I believe it was Nova.
Yes.
And it they presented it as if this was the ultimate authority and ultimate end. And just, you know, common sense, not even my study of all this stuff, when they did a downsized scale model, it just, the whole thing, once I saw they were doing that, I just disregarded anything they did after that because it was totally in the realm of the absurd and it had nothing to do with the empirical demonstration of how the pyramids were actually built.
No, it was horrible. A number of those TV documentaries, they have forklifts and steel cables right off of camera. And then they move the stones a few feet on camera and then say that's how it was done. It's just ridiculous. Here's another thing. They say they pour water on the ramp to make it slick for the stone. Well, the next bunch of people pulling up another stone, it's going to be slick for them to walk on.
They're going
to
slip, and I don't think they had high-tech anti-slip boots back then.
Yeah, I mean, it's just farcical.
Oh, yeah, but there again,
Egyptology,
it's...
Egyptology is the phrenology of the 21st century. Phrenology is where they said the bumps on your head determine your personality.
That was actually a Harvard professor that said that, and that was taken as hard science at one time, too. So
yeah, you could get your degree in it and everything. Well, the reason why that science has ceased to exist is because it cannot support itself using the scientific method. Egyptology is in a similar state in that it cannot support its hypotheses with using the scientific method.
Amazing, amazing stuff. Now, do you regularly travel to Egypt and take a look around?
I've been there. It's been several years. There's time constraints, and the book just came out. I need to get back there again for possibly we're going to do a small-scale documentary for some on-site camera work and also some research. So I do need to get back there. So it's a tremendous... If anyone can get to Egypt, please do it. I mean, it's interesting. The most fascinating place on Earth, I think.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful stuff. And one question I have, there's a lot of politics involved with this as well, on a lot of levels, not just academic politics, but, you know, the Egyptian Antiquities Department and different people wanting to do different things. You know, some people want to study the caves underneath the pyramids in the area, and other people want to do more astrological kinds of things. I guess what I'm asking is, did you have any problems when you were in Egypt? And number two, what do you think that all of this kind of controversy really boils down to? I can't quite get a handle on why this is so provocative.
Okay, I'll help you with that. No, most of our research was unofficial, let me put it that way. Our on-site work is probably the best euphemism I can come up with, unofficial. A lot of it has to do with egos and that type of thing. Gatenberg, with the little robot that went up the vent in the king's chamber in the Great Pyramid, well, he did a press release or whatever, and the Egyptian antiquities people, you know, got rid of Gatenberg. Okay, that was like in 1993. So there's a lot of egos and a lot of that type of thing. Also, there's money issues. If you have the money, you can do the research. Research isn't just to gain knowledge, but it's to generate income for them.
Money talks and BS walks is, I guess a big part of it, huh?
Mm-hmm. So that's a factor. But our take on how the Great Pyramid was assembled was that it was assembled using water locks up from the Nile all the way up to the building site, and that the Great Pyramid was built level by level, and the stones were easily brought to the building site on water locks. And imagine, if you will, the Great Pyramid, before anything was set in place, the first level of casing stones was set in place around, and that impounded a pond because those stones were cemented together watertight. And then that the water locks came all the way up from the Nile up into that pond, and stones on barges would fill the pond up, the interior stones for the first level. And when that pond was filled up, in effect, the first level of the Great Pyramid was completed. And then they continued to process. We have some pictures on our website about that, and of course the book is well illustrated about the building procedure. It's kind of unique, and a lot of people like it. It actually makes sense.
Very good. Now, can people get your book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and places
Like
that?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any of that, or go into any those large bookstores, and if it's not on the shelf, if it's out, you can just order it from there, or you can go to our website, www.thepump.org, and get the book. We're having an offer where they can get a signed copy, or just go to the Amazon.com, whatever people are interested in.
Oh, okay, very, very good. Now, we're about out of time now, and could you just give us a brief breakdown of what your plans are over, say, the next 2 years or so?
Okay, well, we're going to do another research trip to Egypt. We're also going to do a small documentary with some computer-generated animations, probably a YouTube quality, and we're going to use that to pitch a deal for a bigger documentary. We're also doing some research. We have a research library here that we are adding to, and just a whole host of things. I've done some lectures, that type of thing, but mainly right now, with compiling all the research into the book, we're trying to get the word out for people to find out the information in the book, and at Amazon.com there's a few reviews people can look at, and it's an interesting theory about how the Great Pyramid was assembled and about the lost technologies of the Great Pyramid.
Very good, Stephen. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I'll give out your web address once more. It's www.thepump.org, and I'd like to invite you back for an update on your research. Will you come back sometime?
Well, I'd love to. I really appreciate it.
Very good.